here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Spogler is being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's show. And now, here's your host, Mr. Jack Spogler.
Welcome, everybody. Insight, Jack Spogler.
Oops, sorry. Had you on the wrong one.
What?
Yeah, I had you on the wrong one.
So what? I wasn't on?
That's correct. Oh, no. You were right. Am I on? Nope.
Nope, I wasn't on. So, welcome to Insight 2020, the summer of 2020. Great to be back in the saddle again. Neil?
Yep. We've done a couple of things with the school here and there since we shut everything down back in March, but not much.
Not much. So, well, and speaking of shutting things down in March, it kind of segues well into our guest this evening. Our guest is Mr. Jason Menchofer from the Mercer County Health Department. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Jack.
So, Jason, you were telling me that you've got some Fort Recovery ties, so why don't you share a couple of those?
Sure. Well, the most notable one probably for the audience is the fact that my dad, Warren Menchofer, taught school here for 30 years while I was a kid. And so he's pretty well known in the community.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit before we went on. And he's pretty fond of the area as well. He had a lot of good memories, a lot of good years here.
He was an icon here, yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then I just happened to be dating one of his third grade students, Kelly Kaffenberger, from Fort Recovery here. So we've got a couple ties with dad teaching here, and then the Kaffenbergers here in town.
So. Fantastic. So what's your title with the county health department?
I'm the health department administrator.
Okay. So with the structure of that. Okay. So there's a board. Right?
Yeah, that's correct. There's a county board of health, which oversees the health department, you know, makes policy level decisions and things like that, takes enforcement action when we need to, provides support that way. That is separate from the county commissioners. So the health department is a little bit different than a lot of the county agencies. We still kind of fall in line with a lot of what the different county agencies do, but we are independent from the county as a whole.
Okay, so the funding for the health department comes from where?
Well, a portion of it comes from what they call inside millage, which is basically tax revenue that is collected from all the political subdivisions in that county. So the townships, villages, and the city of Salina all contribute a certain amount, and I can't tell you off the top of my head what the total is, but it's a sizable chunk of the health department budget. But then a lot of the rest of that comes in the form of fees for services that we provide, immunizations, you know, birth and death certificates, and also all of the environmental health programs that involve permits, licenses, inspections, water tests, all those type of things. You know, we are able to charge fees to recover the cost of providing those services. And then there are also some grant monies that come down from the state and federal level to help fund some of what we do as well.
Very good. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a real quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about COVID-19 in Mercer County and what the hell's going on to a certain extent. So
sir,
we'll be back right after this.
Hey, this is Stacy with Brick Street Tavern. We have added a couple new items to our menu. Spicy pickle fries, pizza bites, cauliflower pizza, and cheese curds. Stop up and try our new items or give us a call to get them to go.
At Cooper Farms, we know we would not be where we are today without the hard work and dedication from our team members for the last 80 years. That's why we partnered with Activate Healthcare and made their health and well-being our top priority. All team members enrolled in the Cooper Farms Health Insurance Plan have access to our three Activate Health Center locations. There are no co-pays, free lab work, and many prescriptions are free. To take advantage of this, as well as other great benefits, visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Hello, I'm Kenny Canote from K&L Tractor Sales, Fort Recovery, Ohio. Now you can mow like the pros with a Simplicity zero-turn mower. These mowers have all the features professionals demand. Durability, heavy-duty construction, and of course, a perfect cut. Simplicity zero-turn mowers with their exclusive suspension system let you mow more lawn in less time, and you'll have fun doing it, because these mowers are unlike any you've ever used. So stop by K&L Tractor and discover the secret to a professionally manicured lawn. Simplicity, the way to a beautiful lawn.
With the cancellation of the 2020 Win on the Wabash Super Raffle in-person event, the drawing of the main raffle and Blue Jacket Bonanza Super Slide Raffle will now take place virtually on August 29th from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. You can watch the event live by tuning into Wabash Television Channel 70, streaming us through our Facebook page, Wow Raffle, through our YouTube channel, Wow Raffle, or listen live right here on Fort Recovery Radio. In addition to the $495,000 worth of cash and prizes we'll be giving away that day, we'll also have 50-50 tickets for sale through our website, wowraffle.com, and at a drive-thru set up in Ambassador Park. We have a great lineup of entertainment slated for August 29th for our virtual 2020 Win on the Wabash, so don't miss it.
Jack Stogler, Jason Menchofer, you know what? And I know that it's going to be different this year than last year, but I can't help believe that those guys will find a way to make that wow thing a really cool event, even if it's done virtually.
Yeah, and originally he asked if they could broadcast it on Fort Recovery Radio. I said yes. And then he said something about, do you think you can do, because we, Mr. Menchover, we do a Christmas show that we do Facebook Live, so people kind of like that. So I said, well, this person might be able to show you, this person might be able to show you. So then they started getting all kinds of ideas. It's going to be on Wabash Channel 70, so people can watch it on their TV. They're also doing Facebook Live, and they're also doing YouTube. The YouTube and Facebook are both wow. I think if you start typing in, it'll come up.
It'll pop up.
Wow, something. They're both.
Well, I wish
wow,
those guys.
Wow, raffle. Wow, raffle. And it's, you know, $485,000 or something worth of stuff is what they're giving away. It's crazy.
That is pretty cool.
Yep.
So. Jason, you know, there's so many topics to talk about from this COVID standpoint. So, you know, let's just start with the current numbers, and you know, we'll focus on the Mercer County area.
Okay, great. That's good, because those are the numbers I have with me.
Not good.
So as of today, we're reporting a cumulative total of 761 confirmed cases in Mercer County. That's from the beginning. Fortunately, 666 of those are reported as recovered cases, so they've made it through their 10-day isolation period. And as far as we know, they don't have any more symptoms or anything like that. Early on in this situation, we were calling all those people to kind of confirm that. Now, because things have gotten so big and the workload has gotten to be such a big thing, we use the term presumed recovered, because we really don't have time to follow up on every single case. Correct. So we have, as of this afternoon, we only had 31 pending test results. There might be some more now, but that's a trend in a good direction. A few weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, we might have had a couple hundred sitting out there that we were waiting on results. And so that means you could have quite a few people coming in that have tested positive.
Sure.
We've currently got six people hospitalized, and cumulatively, people ask about that. I think we're probably somewhere up around 80 people from Mercer County that have been hospitalized from beginning to end. But since the beginning of this, we've tried to focus on reporting current hospitalizations. You know, during the whole flatten the curve phase, whenever we were told to, you know, hunker down, stay at home, really try to prevent the spread so that we're not overwhelming the hospitals, we felt it was meaningful to report how many people were currently in the hospital, not how many people ever had been. Unfortunately, we have seen 15 deaths that have been attributed to COVID-19. Three of those have been reported in the last couple days. Happened a few days ago, but we wait until we can get confirmation of, you know, what the death certificate says is the actual cause of death. And
are they fudging them like everybody says they are? I'm going to say that doesn't happen around here because too many people know too many people. And if somebody starts saying that was COVID and, you know, 500 people in the county know that it wasn't.
They know otherwise, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, I haven't seen evidence that that's happening here. You know, You hear all the conspiracy theories and all those things, but...
We can't say that it's not happening somewhere else, especially in big cities, because all kinds of weird stuff happens there that nobody can go check. But around here, everybody knows everybody, and you can't, right. You can't go pulling that stuff.
In fact, you know, you can't even necessarily get away with making a mistake on something like that, because somebody will know better, and they'll let you know, and we appreciate
without
that.
Without a doubt.
Yep. We, you know, we want to do things right. We want to report accurate information. I guess the last... Well, I've got a couple more numbers for you. We're currently reporting 78 active cases in the county. So those are people who have tested positive for.
And how many did you say are of those 78? You said before that how many are hospitalized?
Six of those are hospitalized that we're aware of.
Okay. Yep.
And so as far as when we talk about active cases, we're talking about that big number that I gave you in the beginning, the cumulative number of cases minus the confirmed cases and the people who have passed away from the disease. And actually, kind of going back to your question about fudging the numbers, if you do the math, you're going to end up one short between... the answer to that math problem and the number of active cases that we report. And the reason for that is because there actually was one person who tested positive, had COVID, and passed away, but it was not because of COVID. So that we can say that does actually happen.
Yeah.
You know, contrary to the people that say if somebody has COVID and they die in a car accident, it's a COVID death. But, that doesn't always happen.
Well, so it seems like there's a lot of times when the way that it's framed is a COVID-related death or died from COVID complication or, you know, complications from COVID. They may have had several ongoing issues.
Yes.
And they got COVID and then died from one of those issues.
That's correct. And that is, I think, is often the case. I don't see all of the death certificates myself, but I think it's often the case that the people who are more likely to be severely affected or end up dying from COVID are the ones who were weakened because they already had other problems to begin with.
So why is Mercer County and Dark County now, we're like, you know, agriculture, you know, we flipped the one and two spots there.
Right.
So why here and why now?
That's an excellent question. Maybe we'll start with the why now. I think in the beginning, when this was a new thing, or at least as far as we knew, it was a new thing. I mean, things like this are always here before they're discovered, so who knows how long it's been going on. But I think in the early stages of this pandemic, it was much easier for the virus to spread in densely populated areas. You heard about, you know, the New Yorks and the Seattles and you know, even the cities.
Yeah, Columbus and Indianapolis were
right. Hot Cleveland, spots Cincinnati. I mean, those were our earlier hot spots where it was really spreading. And, you know, part of that was because they are so densely populated. Part of it was probably likely because, you know, we were doing a pretty good job at staying home whenever we were asked to. And even when, you know, you did go to Walmart or the grocery store or the hardware store, wherever you needed to go to do your essential business, there's not as many people there, you know, as what there might be in the more urban areas. So I think that's why it slowly built here. And then, you know, we hit a period where we had a handful of outbreaks around specific facilities or activities, and you've heard about all those in the news. You know, we had the turkey processing plant. We had a couple nursing homes that had pretty sizable outbreaks early on, and then things kind of calmed down. I mean, at one time, about half of our cases were from those concentrated places. So it wasn't so much like it was outspreading in the community. And then, like I said, things kind of calmed down, and we were sliding along, starting to feel like we were getting back a little bit to normal, at least in terms of the health department world, and getting back to some of our normal job duties. And then in July, there was a funeral and some different events that were associated with that funeral that seemed to touch off another outbreak. And things have kind of accelerated since then, but it seems now to be more of a community widespread kind of thing, because right now we really don't have any active outbreaks of where we can tie more than a couple of cases to a facility or a gathering or, you know, a group. But we have seen, I guess, part of getting to your question of why it's happening here now and in other rural areas. One of the things we've seen here is we've seen quite a bit of household spread among families. So, you know, we'll get a test result. Somebody has COVID, and our people that do the contact tracing will call that person up and interview them and kind of try to get an idea maybe where they got it and who they've been in contact with, so that then they can get a hold of those people and try to isolate so they don't continue to spread it outward. And, you know, a lot of people in Mercer County have multiple children and, you know, multiple people in a household. And oftentimes our contact tracers will talk to those household contacts, the, you know, a spouse or kids or whatever. They'll talk about the kids, you know, on behalf of the kids with a spouse. And a few days later, you might start finding out that some of those people are getting sick. So I think there's been a lot of that in terms of household and family spread, due to the fact that, you know, some of our households are larger and our families are close in this area, that has contributed to that spread. Also, I think it, you know, I'd probably be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that we are pretty independent here. We don't necessarily like to be told what to do. And so we don't necessarily always comply with all the guidelines maybe as well as we could. And,
oh, you know, well, you're talking outside of Fort Recovery.
Oh, sure.
Of course. Okay.
Okay.
You know, and I will, you kind of say that in jest, but I'll give Fort Recovery some credit. I mean, you know, I've worked with or talked with groups from down here. Before we went on air, we were talking about the WOW raffle and all the things that they're doing. I guess you talked about that on the air here, too.
Yeah, we had a promo that played.
We talked with that group several weeks ago, and I was also in communication with people with the tractor pull committee. And we tried to kind of walk a line. You know, we've got a job to do, and we need to try to control the spread, but we're also well aware of the values of the communities around here. So, you know, in those situations, we would kind of put it out there where, you know, these are the requirements, and this is what you're proposing. It doesn't quite fit. We really can't condone it. And some places, some groups have decided to go ahead and have events that probably push the envelope a little bit. And those two particular groups, you know, the tractor pull, unfortunately, was canceled. And I hated to see that. And then, you know, the WOW has had to go virtual, go a different direction.
Yeah, at least they can do their thing. The tractor pull is just done. But
I'll commend those two Fort Recovery groups for, you know, taking this thing seriously you know, following the recommendations. And the other neat thing that's kind of come out of that, you know, talking about the WOW and some of the other things we've seen around the communities here is we've had a lot of unfortunate sacrifices that we've made this year and that we've asked people to make. And that's, you know, that's sad in a lot of ways, but we've also seen quite a bit of innovation come out of that, you know, people taking events virtual and people doing unique graduations for the schools so the seniors can still have some kind of a special experience that they'll look back
on. We had several people comment that what we did I had nothing to do with it, for graduation, it was, they really liked it. They want something like that all the time instead of everybody piling in the gym or a football stadium or something. It's still good to have them all together because only the first sets of parents and students got to hear the valedictorian and salutatorian speeches. Right. But And to me, I think that's important, even if you didn't think you wanted to hear it, it is. But, you know, that they had that going on in churches. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them, where I go, we had been talking about maybe sometime doing online and this and that, and all of a sudden this comes up. Well, at least we'd been talking about it and had some thoughts on it, but then, right. Bam, put it together, and it was a little rudimentary at the beginning, but it's gotten better and better, and a lot of people are staying home and watching. And a lot of people that don't necessarily go to the church or hadn't gone to the church have been watching. So, it's like you said, some innovation. You're doing some things that are going to stick,
right?
And are good.
So when you touched on the role of the health department, okay, and so there's the recommendations from the CDC. There's the directives from the governor. How much freedom does the county health department have in the direction that they provide to schools and businesses and communities?
It varies somewhat depending on the situation, but we're generally bound, if the orders stand up. You know, of course, there's been a lot of controversy about how legal they are. I mean, I can look at the law and point to places where I think it authorizes the State Department of Health to make these orders, which a lot of these, the governor gets the credit or the blame, but a lot of it comes officially out of the State Department of Health. And, you know, we function under oversight from the state, from Ohio Department of Health, day in and day out in our normal lives and our normal jobs as you know, in these health department programs and the different services that we provide. So, you know, for example, if you own a restaurant, there is Ohio Revised Code law and Ohio Administrative Code rules that govern things that, you know, requirements that you need to meet to ensure that you're serving safe food to the public. And that comes down from the state. We're the ones that go out and do those inspections and cite those violations or not if we don't see them. But we're bound by some limits and boundaries from the state and how we do that. And we see this pretty much the same way, even though these are these orders that you see coming down from some from the governor and a lot from the director of Ohio Department of Health are more of a temporary thing. Mm-hmm. They do have some authorization behind them in law in a pandemic type situation here. So we're kind of bound by what those say that we can or can't do or how much leeway we can have. But then we're also, you know, somewhat limited by what the politics of the community will bear out in terms of enforcement. And you know, we are pretty consistent. I think we know the values of the community, and we know that, you know, it's never been our philosophy or our preferred mode of operation to go around throwing our weight around and, you know, citing violations and taking people to court and things like that. So we've really tried to work more on the side of what I would describe as compliance assistance rather than heavy-handed enforcement. We've had to start looking at the possibility of escalating things a little bit in a few places where we've got repeat violations, especially since our numbers have gotten higher and we've been getting negative attention at the state level. So there are some things in the works there, but we really try to avoid having to go that direction as much as we can.
So you talked about the compliance piece. And when we come back, we should take a little break here. When we come back, I want to talk to you about like the health department's role versus the state's role when it comes to dealing with bars and new restaurants. I know there was a bar in New Coldwater that they got in trouble. So I just was kind of interested in if that is a state liquor thing or exactly what it is. So we'll be back to talk about that and other stuff right after this.
Klingchern & Sons Trucking Incorporated is a family-owned and operated business in Burkittsville. They have over 50 years of experience, and they pride themselves on their commitment to punctual transportation and exceptional customer service. They offer local and long-haul transportation. They have dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers. They have great employment opportunities as well. Visit their website at klingchernandsons.com or call them at 937-338-5000. Call Klingchern & Sons Trucking for all your transportation needs. Are you looking for great food? You're looking for Miracle Lanes. Stop in or call them at 375-4274, then just drive through and pick it up. Everybody can have what they want, from their great sandwiches and subs to their famous pizza. Stop worrying about what you're going to have for supper. Just call them at Miracle Lanes, now open every day from 11 to 9. 375-4274.
Boers Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boers, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boers Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boers Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
It's fall and it's time for football. Our Indians will open up the season this Friday hosting the state champion Marion Local Flyers at 7 p.m. at Baron Brogy Field. As always, Jeff Hobbs and Joe Bruns will bring you the play-by-play here on Fort Recovery Radio. Pre-game show around 6:40 as our Indians host Marion Local. If you're not one of the parents who will be at the game, be sure you're tuned in this Friday night for all the action live right here on Fort Recovery Radio, the home of the Indians.
It looked like the whole thing should be frozen.
We're back.
What?
Sorry.
Right. We aren't back yet, are we?
Oh, yeah.
We were really excited about this.
You can tell you've been off a while.
I've been
holy
off
crap. All my life.
Now I don't know where I was. I'm all flustered.
We were talking about the sign language lady on the government broadcast. That's what we were talking about, in case you only heard part of it. I'm not sure how much you got to hear, but we were talking about how we are. How entertaining she is. I can't watch it anymore because I can listen to it, but I can't watch because I'm watching her. I have no idea what he's saying.
Yeah,
and I don't do sign language, so I don't know what she's telling me what he's saying, but I don't know what he's saying. Anyway,
About the compliance piece and the enforcement piece.
Right.
The health department of Mercer County isn't very large, correct?
That's correct. We've got a total of about 17 people.
Is that right?
On our whole staff. And most of the complaint and enforcement type activity is handled by our Environmental Health Division, which is three full-time, one part-time sanitarian.
Poor guys. Can you imagine? Hey, I want you to go check this out. And I know you can't get into specific details, but when a bar or restaurant has a complaint that somebody's not wearing a mask, they're open too late, they're not doing this or that, what's a general process that would go through, and who's the enforcer?
Well, it starts with us normally. I mean, people can, if they see violations that involve liquor establishments, they don't have to call us. They can call that, Liquor Control of the Ohio Investigative Unit, which is a branch of the Ohio State Highway Patrol that enforces regulations in liquor establishments. But I think more often than not, people probably call us. And the first thing that our environmental health folks do is that, if it's an initial complaint, we got a complaint about an establishment, we've never gotten a complaint about them before, they will make contact with somebody who's responsible for operations in that establishment and just make sure that they're aware of all the requirements and what's expected of them, kind of give them the benefit of the doubt and make sure that they're educated as to the requirements that they're expected to meet. So that's the first step, and that's, you know, heavily on the end of that compliance assistance philosophy that I mentioned before. And we've repeatedly done that, honestly, you know, earlier on in this thing. But our Board of Health, a couple weeks, two, 3 weeks ago, approved kind of a plan that we brought to them to where we'll do that once, and that doesn't necessarily even involve going out to the facility. It could just be a phone call, an email, something to document that they've been told, you know, what's expected and that we've gotten a complaint. So at that point, we don't even know for sure that a violation has occurred.
Yep.
We're giving them a heads up. Hey, we got a complaint. This is what we expect. And sometimes we don't hear back. And now if we do, you know, the next step is for one of our sanitarians to go out to the establishment, the whatever it is that somebody's complaining about, and try to observe whether or not there is, in fact, a violation occurring. You might find it as a surprise, but sometimes people call us in with complaints and there's not really a problem. So we want to verify that.
Calling in their ex-wife and stuff, you know, that new type of thing. Yeah,
that does happen occasionally. So we want to make sure that we're not dealing with something like that. And then if our people actually lay eyes on something that's not right, that's not in compliance with the different orders, then we will document that. And if we get an additional complaint, you know, we'll do the same thing. And then at that point, we have to start looking at, you know, is this something that's serious enough and that's, you know, the repetitive nature, does it allow or does it obligate us to work with the prosecutor's office and file some kind of charges to try to escalate that enforcement? And we're really talking about, you know, restaurants, businesses, things like that. Now, anybody that does have that liquor license, like you talked before, we do refer those complaints to the Ohio Investigative Unit and let them, you know,
handle that,
come to the area and check those out. And I know there have been some warnings, and we talked, there has been, you know, one citation, but yeah, we try to let them handle that. They're willing to do that. So that's kind of how the enforcement has evolved over the time that we've been dealing with this.
So we have just completed day two of the school year. Okay. What was the health department's role in helping schools get ready?
Well, we consulted. I consulted with the superintendents pretty much all summer. You know, we were talking periodically, you know, met a couple times, and we have weekly Zoom calls on Thursday mornings to kind of stay up to date on things. So part of it was just helping to make sure there was a consistent interpretation of the orders as they pertain to the schools. And that really even goes back to the very beginning when the schools were shut down, had to go virtual, and then they're trying to decide what they can do for graduation. And so we talked with them and kind of gave them options, and yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, we like your plan, but it doesn't quite fit with what's coming from the state. So what can we do to square that away?
Yeah.
More recently, it's been, you know, how do they prepare the best they can, and how do they put the kids in the safest environment they can to get back to face-to-face learning, which I think the general consensus around here is that that's the best thing for our kids, that there are a lot of reasons why parents want their kids back in person in school, even though we do have a lot of COVID activity going on. So with that being the case, we want to make sure that the schools have the information and the materials and things that they need to be able to, you know, separate out the kids as much as they can, or keep track, you know, keep them from interacting more than you have to. Like, so we talk about like assigned seats and in classrooms and on a bus. So if somebody does get sick, it's easy. You've got a relatively limited number of other kids that they've come into long-term close contact
tracing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it, you know, in recent weeks has been kind of preparation for how are we going to handle that contact tracing piece and who gets quarantined if somebody gets sick. And I think a lot of people think if a kid gets sick, the whole classroom has to go home, or, you know, a couple kids get sick and school shuts down. And that's not really what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But it remains to be seen how sure. much it's going to spread in the schools. And I think the governor has made a good point. I'm sure he said it publicly, and he said it on a couple conference calls, that the school population is likely to mirror what's going on in the general population. So there's not a whole lot of reason to believe that nobody's going to get sick.
Sure.
But, you know, we send kids to school every year and they get sick. It's not COVID.
You know, there have been schools that have had to shut down because of flu season.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, you touched on this. So with the fact that the governor said that there's a direct correlation by what's going on in the community and what we can expect in the schools, was there extra pressure on you, Mercer County, from the governor or the state level to not start kids in the classroom because we were the highest county?
I would really say from my experience with this, and I have not been involved, obviously, in every conversation with the governor, but I have been involved in a few. And I think I can honestly say that, no, there hasn't been a lot of pressure. Now, he was not hesitant to point out that, you know, we've got the highest new case rate over the last 2 weeks in the state, or we did, and that when you look at, there was a map a week or so ago that
showed. And that's why I asked that question, you know, because he had that map of the highest, and then he had the map of who was going to school. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And we were the only red county that was entirely going back to school in person. And he didn't hesitate to point that out and to point out that experts in other states might recommend not going back in person when the positivity rate's quite as high as it is. But again, we're kind of one of those communities where we're resilient and we're going to suck it up and get it done.
Yeah.
And so that's the plan, and that plan might have to change if things go south. But, you know, he definitely emphasized that there was local freedom to do what's right for the individual communities. And so, I would say there were certainly a lot of information provided that maybe could have guided some communities to go a different direction, but there wasn't a lot of pressure. There weren't any threats of closing schools
well,
down.
Well, I do respect him for that, you know, for you keeping it in the local community's hands. So, tell you what, we're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back and talk about sports and attendance at sports games and that type of thing.
Another topic.
Be back right after this.
Hi, my name is Connor Ramel at Fort Recovery Insurance. Every year, you should review your insurance plans to make sure you have the right protection for your needs. At Fort Recovery Insurance Agency, we'll take you inside our fort to make sure you're paying the right price for the right insurance to protect you. For years, we've been doing just that, and it's time for us to help you too. At Ohio Mutual and Fort Recovery Insurance Agency, we've got something for everyone, and we've got something for you too. Fort Recovery Insurance Agency, call us today at 1-888-375-4181.
Do you have that one room that is too cold in the winter or too hot in the summer? Need to send air or heat to an addition, basement, or garage, but getting it there seems impossible? Introducing Mitsubishi Multi-Zone Systems, your heating and air solution for one room or independent control of every room. Oh, did I mention Mitsubishi H21 systems are ductless and can be installed almost anywhere, even the ceiling? Get a $500 instant savings discount now at Reasoner Energy. Another problem solved by Reasoner Energy. 419-678-4858.
Wayne Street Market always has great prices all through their store, and here are some of the special deals they have for you through August 27th.
The response to their sale in the meat department has been great, so they're continuing their steak sale. Ribeyes just $6.99 a pound, New York strips $6.49 a pound, T-bones only $5.99 a pound, and sirloins $4.99 a pound. And there's 80% lean ground chuck for $2.99 a pound, loose or patties, and 73% lean ground beef is only $2.49 a pound in a 10-pound roll. And their delicious store-made heat and eat cream chicken has been reduced to just $3.99 a pound. And in the dairy section, there's a variety of packaged slice and shredded cheeses, 3 for $7. And if you're looking for a great meal in a hurry, their deli has delicious meal specials every day from open to close. Lots of great prices right here in Fort Recovery at Wayne Street Market, the best meat market around. Wabash Mutual has set up temporary free Wi-Fi spots around Mercer County during this state of emergency for those who do not have an internet connection at home. So if you're working from home or a high school or college student using remote learning and you don't have access to the internet at home, Wabash has you covered at no cost to you. It'll be available from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And here in Fort Recovery, you can access the free Wi-Fi connection from your vehicle at the pavilion at the pool park. But to keep social distancing, you won't be able to enter the pavilion. Again, thanks to Wabash Mutual, free Wi-Fi will be available from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the pavilion at the pool park so you can work from home and students can do their remote learning assignments during these closures due to the coronavirus.
We're back.
That one, we're glad we didn't get that.
That's true.
Just like flipping the switch over.
That's true. Yep.
Impressive. Yeah.
So we were talking about getting back to school, you know, and I tell you what, I do want to give a shout out to the teachers and the administrators. Probably the only people that benefited from this was the bus drivers, and that's because the kids have masks on. They can't be, you know, screaming the whole time they're in the bus. But you know, I know that a lot of people are working their butts off to make sure that our kids can go to school and can stay in school.
Yep.
And
why is that, Jack?
Because they love our kids and they want what is best for them.
Yep. And they don't want them in the house anymore because they have to go to work. The appreciation for teachers has gone way up. Not that people around here didn't appreciate them anyway.
Yeah, so, you know, I just, you know, really have to give a shout out to everybody that's involved with the school system. I think that's fabulous. And you know, which kind of, you know, segues us into the into the whole sports season. So, what's the guideline? So to me, it doesn't make sense to have an outdoor football game in a stadium that seats 2,500 people and have 80 people there. Okay?
Right.
So why don't the guidelines make sense?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question.
They do make sense to somebody.
They don't make
sense to you.
That's an excellent question. And those guidelines, the actual order with the guidelines for sporting events and spectators just came out a few days ago. And I don't know all of those details yet, but I do know, and I think this is pretty much what you were referring to, is that they do limit attendance at outdoor sporting events at 15% of the capacity of the venue, the stadium, or 1,500 people, whichever number is smaller. So that puts us at a pretty limited audience in the stadiums in Mercer County, even Salina. You know, I was talking to one of their school board members this morning, and I think it was going to be limited to something like 600 people, and I think 160 of the ticket vouchers were designated for the opposing team. And this particular person I was talking to was inquiring about the possibility of submitting a request for a variance, which there is a provision for that, and was you know, talking about calculations that had already been done, given the amount of space that was available to demonstrate that they could safely accommodate more people than what the order specifies. The order does also specify that those variance requests have to be approved both by us at the local level, at the local health department, and the State Department of Health, and that they won't approve anything that extends the spectators beyond family, basically, or family and loved ones, or whatever they say.
So that 15% means nothing.
Well, I mean, looking at Salina, and that's where I'm from, so that's where I've got the most experience. I've been to a few ball games down here, but you look at the football team, and also there are tickets allotted for the band members, the cheerleaders, and I think that works out to everybody getting like 2 ticket vouchers apiece for each game, that they can, decide which parents and siblings or whoever, grandparents, who gets to go. And even small families can't attend the game as a whole family. And, what they're saying, or the person I was talking to this morning was saying, was that they think they can safely accommodate enough people in the stadium to where at least you can have families be able to go, watch their brother, sister, son, daughter, play in a game, or play in the march in the band or cheer or whatever, and which would be a little bit better than where we are now. But it's difficult to kind of identify with that, I guess, especially because it's an outdoor event and because there have been other exceptions made for other outdoor activities that might allow more people in a similar space than what we're talking about in these football games or other outdoor sports venues.
That's a part that really is hard to swallow from, some people's standpoint, is that, you can have a peaceful protest, but you can't get together to watch your kids play high school sports. So
that is difficult, and there are, as they started coming, as the state started issuing new orders to come out of the shutdown, I suppose it was inevitable, but that was one of the most difficult things, was the fact that there seemed to be so many exceptions, and then people that didn't get an exception made for them, for their group or their activity, could look at that and say, well, why is there an order saying that you can have a county fair, before the county fair thing changed, with a concert with, what was it, maybe 2,500 people or something like that, but you can't have spectators at a tractor pull, and it was... And we empathize with all those people because I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
So you, so I heard that there was going to be kind of like a hall monitor at each of these games to kind of judge if schools are doing that right. So is that a county health official? Person that has to do that, or is there somebody assigned at the state level to do that?
I believe the way the order reads is that somebody from the school is
so
responsible for
that.
Right. So the school system, it would have to have somebody assigned that's going to be, I think that hall monitor is a good term. I think they said compliance officer in the rules, but they're in the order. But basically a hall monitor, kind of patrolling, trying to keep people in their family groups. And, I don't know that I'd want that person's job.
I know. So I asked you this off air, this has been a year unlike any other,
Amen.
And so through this process, has this given you more? Do you feel more favorably or less favorably about the CDC?
That's an excellent question,
yes.
Jack.
And the answer to that is yes.
Yes, I do.
depending on which detail you're talking about. Yes, I have complete confidence in that. Next one, I'm thinking, I don't know where that came from, and they haven't sent us reasons. Go ahead. I'll let you go. Yeah.
You know, I like to use that answer. I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't come up with that in response to that question. But no, it's an excellent question. And like I said before, I appreciate you asking me that off the air and giving me a moment to think about it before I had to answer it on the air. You know, I don't know if it's changed a whole lot. I think the things that come from the CDC, I think, are backed in sound science, generally. And the CDC is not really a regulatory agency, I don't believe, for the most part. You know, they don't have any regulatory authority, really, over us.
Most of the time, share, you know, recommendations or you guidelines.
Right, right. And so I think, you know, because they're not directly regulating entities like maybe the FDA or the State Departments of Health or some of the USDA, some of those other agencies are, I think maybe they're less influenced by political pressures and things like that. So I think I'm still pretty confident, I think, in what we're seeing coming from them. The thing that I'd like people to remember with what's going on right now, because, and we talked about this, I think, before the show even started, is that, you know, you see a lot of things that change, might look like missteps where they say one thing and then correct it to something else. But Jack, you made the point that this is we call it a novel virus. It's something new. It's something we don't have experience with. So these people, even though they are scientists, they are experts, they can't know everything at once. And so as they're learning, as we're learning, the story is going to change naturally. And that's just part of science and making observations and learning things and trying things and realizing they didn't work, so we change our approach. And so it's more of a learning process, I think, than it should be viewed as a sign that they don't know what they're doing. They're just learning as they go, like the rest of us are.
So, well, I tell you what, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, I'm going to...
Hang on 1 second.
What's that?
We got something more important.
What's that?
Oh, what now?
This is big.
Okay.
It's big. Uh-oh. Who's your dad?
We've already talked about that.
We already covered that. Weren't you listening
to the
beginning?
He gave me the board.
Well, might have been, maybe you needed to do it a little bit more, because it didn't really help, did it?
You can join Doug Colling, I guess, in that process.
There's a few other ones, too, but that's one I remember too.
Without a doubt.
He's listening, by the way.
Yeah. And there is a...
I hope he didn't just spit his coffee out. Yeah.
There's a long list of teachers that gave Bob the board. So we're going to come back, and I'm going to kind of give you a fact or fiction type question.
Okay.
And just get your thoughts on about 5 or 6 different topics that I would love to know your opinion on.
All right.
Okay, so sounds we'll be good. Back right after this.
Forge Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Forge, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Forge Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Forge Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
At Cooper Farms, we're building a culture that makes us more than a workplace. We believe that producing quality products, giving back to our communities, and taking care of our team members are all part of our foundation as a company. We want to see our team members succeed, and that's why we pride ourselves on promoting from within the company. We believe giving our team members all the tools necessary to grow with us is what will keep our tradition moving forward. To join the Cooper Farms family and experience a culture like no other, visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
This is Stacy from Brick Street Tavern, and I want to invite you to stop in for our delicious home-cooked daily lunch specials for only 5 1/4. Starting at 11 Monday through Friday, Brick Street Tavern features Mystery Meal Monday, Meatloaf Tuesday, Roasted Chicken Wednesday, Tenderloin Basket on Thursdays, and on Friday you can choose from our Soup and Salad Bar or our famous half-pound hand-patty cheeseburger basket. We also offer supper specials on Friday and Saturday evening, including a New York strip steak and all-you-can-eat roasted chicken, both complemented by our large salad bar, choice of potato, and a honey roll. Stop in and see us at Brick Street Tavern and enjoy some great home cooking.
With the cancellation of the 2020 Win on the Wabash Super Raffle in-person event, the drawing of the main raffle and Blue Jack of Bonanza Super Slide Raffle will now take place virtually on August 29th from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. You can watch the event live by tuning into Wabash Television Channel 70, streaming us through our Facebook page, Wow Raffle, through our YouTube channel, Wow Raffle, or listen live right here on Fort Recovery Radio. In addition to the $495,000 worth of cash and prizes we'll be giving away that day, we'll also have 50-50 tickets for sale through our website, wowraffle.com, and at a drive-thru set up in Ambassador Park. We have a great lineup of entertainment slated for August 29th for our virtual 2020 Win on the Wabash, so don't miss it.
We're back. Insight, Jack Stogler, Jason Minchofer. Bubba just asked if Neil was going to spray before he started his show. And most time, Neil has to spray after Bob gets done.
For various reasons.
For various reasons.
That wasn't one of the facts.
In fact, that was a gimme.
Factor fiction. Okay, so I've got about a half dozen topics, and I tell you what, I know that you're in a tough spot to necessarily give your own personal opinion about things. You know,
that's fair.
So answer what you're comfortable with or expand on your answer, but you know, these are just some new things that are out there. Okay,
sure.
So due to COVID, people should get a flu shot.
I'm going to say fact, but I'm definitely going to have to elaborate a little bit. The reason I say that, you know, the flu shot, we don't expect that to do anything to protect people from COVID, but COVID and the flu have a lot of the same symptoms. And so if you get the flu shot and if it effectively protects you from getting the flu and getting flu-like symptoms, that might also throw up a red flag that, you know, that you need to be tested for COVID and quarantined or whatever. If people can avoid some of that by at least not getting the flu, that's probably going to be to their benefit.
Yeah. The other part is, if we have a bad flu season, if more people get the flu vaccine, maybe it won't overwhelm hospitals and such. You know, if like you've got a lot of people with the flu and a lot of people with COVID, that's just more for the hospital to handle too.
I'm going to say fact on that one, keeping in mind that you did ask me for my opinion. So that's not a medical fact. Yeah. I'm not a medical person, but yeah, I mean, it stands to reason if there could be some burden on the hospitals if there were to be a spike in COVID cases and a bad flu season at the same time, you know, during the same part of the year. And anything we can do to try to ease that is going to be beneficial.
Yeah. Fact or fiction? This is all going to go away after the election.
I sure wish it would, but I'm going to say fiction. I don't buy into that.
No, that has to be true because I read it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So I have to change my tune on that one. If it's on the internet, it must be true.
It must be true.
Okay. Asymptomatic people can't pass on COVID.
I'm going to call fiction on that one. There is quite a bit of evidence out there to suggest or indicate that people are fairly highly contagious within the 2 days before they start to develop symptoms. So there's been evidence that, that asymptomatic people, in fact, do pass COVID to other people.
Amy Acton, hero or villain?
Oh, my.
Wow.
Great question.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So.
And again, I'll give you some wiggle room.
How about if we let him keep his job?
No, I'm comfortable with this one. Yeah. I'm gonna qualify my answer, but I'm going to, and this is probably not the popular Mercer County choice, but I'm going to say hero, and here's why. I don't agree with every order that she issued. I don't necessarily agree with all of the decisions, but I do believe that she was relying on other experts around her, and there's no doubt in my mind that she was trying to do the best she could for the state of Ohio. One of the things that maybe I have a harder time with is I think her vision was probably a complete elimination of COVID. Not an acceptable level, but just nothing. And we can't have that with anything. We wouldn't get in our trucks or cars in the morning and drive anywhere if we were about being completely safe. So I think that's where maybe she parted ways from our values here. But I will give her and in fact Governor DeWine a lot of credit for at least determining what they thought was right and trying to stick by that, even though they knew it wasn't going to be popular with a lot of people.
And I'll tell you what, I think if like it would have been a 3 week or 4 week deal, I think that everybody would have been seen as a hero.
Yes.
But when it kept getting extended and extended and the numbers weren't going to where they said that they were going to go,
right,
it really threw a flag up to a lot of people.
That was a big bone of contention here, because if you remember, whenever we were at least starting to have a lot of conversations about reopening businesses and getting people back to work, we were sitting here with like 13 confirmed cases in the county for a week and a half, I think. Maybe it was 8 days. It was at least that long. Yep. And so everybody's saying, what's the deal? Yep. It's not hitting us. Why can't we get people back to work, keep our economy going? And that's fair argument.
Very valid.
Yeah.
The last one, mask. Do they really do?
Jack. Now I have to edit.
Do you have that delay?
No.
I mean,
just have to edit it out of the archives.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say a mask is 100% effective, but again, just like the whole, we're never going to completely eliminate COVID. Nothing's 100% effective. But, when you look at it as a source, what we call a source protection type of measure, where it's really more, if I'm wearing a mask, it's more so I don't sneeze droplets and stuff all over Bob than it is so I don't get it from somebody else, because it's going to contain it at the source before it can really spread out, start evaporating and becoming a small enough particle that maybe it can get through his mask. So yeah, masks aren't the answer to everything. They're just one layer of protection.
So if you're wearing one, why does Bob have to wear one?
To cover his ugly
mug. Protect me if he sneezes. Well, I wasn't going to say anything like that. I don't know, Bob.
It's the right thing to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the way I look at it, is that it's something that you can do out of consideration to others. But it's also something that if enough of us do it, hopefully it will make a difference in where our numbers are going and the kind of attention we're getting and whether or not we're able to keep things under control enough to have a football season, or are we going to have a game and half the team's going to be quarantined and then we're going to have to sit out for 2 weeks before we can have another game? I mean, that's a very real possibility.
Yep.
Nobody wants that. So.
No. At the volleyball match last night at St. Mary's, every person in the gym except the players and our announcers had masks on.
Okay.
Nope. So we've covered a lot of stuff in an hour. Talk to me about your perception or of the next, between now and the end of the year, what's it going to be like?
Well, I wish I knew. hopefully it's going to continue to get better. I mean, over the last week or so, we've seen our numbers kind of start to go down, trends going back in the right direction. But I think a lot of it's going to have to do with how careful we are with kids going back to school and wearing the masks in school and all the different things that, put together, the masks, the social distancing, the hygiene, the spraying down the microphones after I leave, all those things. You know, if we can put all those things together and everybody can do at least a couple of those things, hopefully we can start to control things a little bit to where things will start to change. One thing that we're told is coming, and I don't think we talked about this at all, even off the air here, is that mass gathering order that still carries in some situations, if no exception has been made, a 10-person limit on how many people can get together out in public. And, we're told that that's under revision and that we're supposed to see something different coming. I don't necessarily look at that to be something that comes out and says we can fill a 2,500 person football stadium.
Yeah, or there won't be any rock concerts in the near future.
But things might start to change that way. And in fact, there was a new order that came out last night about entertainment venues that would include rock concerts that says that those can resume, but they have pretty much the same specifications on attendance as the football and sports games, where it's either 15% or 1,500 people, whichever one's smaller. So they'd probably have to do six or seven shows to honor all the people that have already bought tickets for their shows.
But can they do mosh pits? Can all 1,500 of those people get in the same spot?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah. who's going to stop them there?
So, right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. So, Jason, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to touch on? We covered a lot in an hour and five minutes, but, consider this an open invitation to come back and visit. If like there's anything that we can do to help communicate things that you guys need, if you want to come and update the community on the latest, we would love to have you back. So
and also if there are certain things that wouldn't be an hour, like if you have a little bit here and there, sometimes we'll have people do the thing over the phone, or have a portable recorder. We can take it over and you can do, this is an announcement that we need to have, or if you just want to send it to us and we can record it, anything like that. We want to get the real thing out instead of, I saw this and that's, somebody else said this. Well, the guy over here, now that's not what they're doing in Indiana, because I just heard tonight that Greek's Pizzeria in Indiana, over in Portland, they're having their buffet again, but they can't have salad. They can have the pizza buffet.
Well, that makes sense.
The salad, I guess everybody's getting out of the same bowl, maybe. I don't know. I didn't understand it, but they're, they have the gas engine and tractor show over there, generally 100,000 people, and that's a big deal for that town. And they're, Greek's Pizzeria says pizza buffet every day. But can't do salad, so if there's anything like that you need to clarify or need to get out there, all you have to do is let us know and either email something and I can record it, or if you want to record it and send it over on your phone, that's perfectly fine.
Well, we appreciate that. I think that's one of the positives for us at the health department that's come out of this experience, is we've kind of developed some nice partnerships with some of the local media here that have really been helpful and I think instrumental in helping us get as good and factual information out as we can.
Yeah. Kevin on Spectrum on WCSM, he's really good at asking good questions.
Even sometimes if he sees some misinformation or criticism out there that he doesn't think is warranted, he'll call us up and ask if we want him to say something, or do a soundbite or something. So
I tell you what, we've you cross paths with the Cooper thing, and sure. You and your department, you have been fair to us, and you've been extremely helpful, and we appreciate that partnership too. So
I'm glad to hear that.
I really thank you for taking the time to come on.
Wait till you leave,
Bob. You're not supposed to tell our guests all the secrets.
So, yes,
if you don't mind, I will plug one more thing. I know you asked me if I had anything else to add, and we don't have enough time left to go into any more COVID topics. But you mentioned flu shots earlier,
yes,
and we have decided just recently to go ahead with our annual drive-through flu shot clinic at the fairgrounds, and that'll be Tuesday, October 6th from 9:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening. So, if the people who are listening need to get a flu shot, maybe don't want to go sit in a waiting room with people coughing on each other, things like that, you can drive through one of the buildings out there at the fairgrounds on October 6th, and we've been doing it. It'll probably be the 12th or 13th year that the health department has put that on, and it's a pretty smooth process to get people through there. It gets a little hairy maybe 4 or 5 o'clock when people are getting off work and bringing van loads of kids, but for the most part it's pretty quick in and out.
And who's kind of the targeted people that should really consider getting a flu shot?
Well, again, I'm not a medical person, and I haven't read up on flu lately. But generally, I think you're looking at anybody who might be immunocompromised might be already susceptible, because, like we talked earlier with the COVID, maybe it's going to hit them harder because they have other medical problems. Probably people over a certain age. I don't remember what that cutoff is. Maybe 60, 65, somewhere in there. We have the high dose flu vaccine should be available. We had a little problem getting that last year, but I know that's ordered. And that's recommended for people in those higher age ranges. And so those are the basic recommendations that I'm aware of.
On that flu shot, who pays for that? Is it their insurance if they have it? Cash if they don't?
Yes, we definitely bill insurance, and actually, I don't think we handle any cash at the time of the drive-through.
Okay,
I believe it's either bill insurance or send them a bill. I'm not 100% sure because I don't work in that part of the drive-through, but I don't think we generally handle cash the day of.
Okay,
very good. Well, right. Jason, I really appreciate you coming in. I enjoyed it. Maybe we'll. Talk again in March and say, do you remember when we used to have that whole COVID thing?
That'd be great. I'd love to go back and talk about COVID in past tense and whatever else is going on at that time. Hopefully it won't be like this. So really appreciate the opportunity this evening. It's a pleasure talking with you guys.
Fantastic. So stay tuned for Bubba and Fee and Sports Talk coming up right after this.
Thank you for staying tuned to Insight with Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show was being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.